We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
On Focus today, we're talking by phone with Bill Timaeus in Kansas City. Bill, can you hear me all right?
Yes, good morning.
Nice to be talking with you. We're talking about, has America lost its mind? Can we talk together anymore? And I'm Steve Shoemaker, sitting in for David Inge while he's taking some time off. Bill, you're a regular blogger. You have written before columns for the Kansas City newspaper. You also write a column for the National Catholic Reporter Online. You write for religious magazines, mainly on issues of faith. Why are we talking about has America lost its mind?
Well, it seems to me that our ability to talk with one another about faith and about what really matters in life has degenerated, and we're almost unable to do that anymore, it seems. I think maybe Christian author and social critic Oz Guinness, a member, by the way, of the Guinness Beer family, described the problem best in a recent book he called The Case for Civility. He wrote this: "The current style of discourse in the American culture wars forms a black hole into which the fundamental principles and striking successes of the Republic are being drawn and destroyed." I don't think that's much of an overstatement. I think we are getting to the point where our public discourse is simply screaming past each other, and I think we need to find ways to change that.
Now, I've enjoyed reading your blogs, which incidentally are very civil, but the tone, your tone is so different than what so many people are writing these days. Do you have to work at it?
Yes and no. There are times when I feel like, you know, slapping people upside the head because of the positions they take and the outrageous nature of them, in my view. But it seems to me that if we can't look one another in the eye, even if we disagree with each other, and see in each other our common humanity, that we've really lost the game. And I really think that that's where our faith communities come in. I'm a Presbyterian Christian, and in my tradition, and certainly many other religious traditions, there is this idea that people are of inestimable value, that the human being is of such a high order, that, and because created by God and so on, that every human being is of worth. And, you know, it's why we have a welfare system. It's why we, good heavens, it's why we have a Coast Guard that will go out and save one silly sailor who got in trouble out on the sea, just because we value that one life. And it seems to me that in our public discourse, we are losing that value. We are losing the idea that the person to whom I am speaking is of equal value to me, certainly in God's sight. And when we lose that, then we get into the kinds of trouble that I think we are currently in our culture.
Now, you've been very involved in interfaith matters there in Kansas City and indeed nationally. I mentioned that you write even though you're a Protestant, you write a regular column every 2 weeks for a Catholic paper, the National Catholic Reporter.
Right.
But you've also been honored recently by a Muslim group in Kansas City for your writing. Your most recent book was published with a Jewish rabbi That book is called They Were Just People, Stories of Rescue in Poland During the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
What has drawn you into curiosity about conversations among people of many different faiths?
Well, it seems to me that if the call to Americans in the 20th century was to get racial harmony right, and I think that was the call, I think the call of this century is to get religious harmony right. We have an opportunity in the United States to model for the rest of the world what it can look like when people of different religious traditions live with each other in harmony, understand each other, don't kill each other, at minimum tolerate each other. That's a pretty low standard, but it would be a place to start. And it seems to me that if we can't do that, then we are long-term in real trouble. When we turn our religious dialogue over to people like Fred Phelps of Topeka or Terry Jones who wanted to burn the Quran, it's just mindless chaos. And we are better than that as a people. I really think that it's important for us to recognize that the Benedictine virtue of humility ought to have a place in our lives, and that even though we may be strongly committed to a faith tradition, as I am, others have other commitments, and we ought to respect those commitments and not bash them and try to undo them, and I think that's a lot of what's been happening in our discourse in recent times.
Let me give listeners an opportunity to join this discourse here on Focus today with our guest Bill Tamaeus. His name, incidentally, for those who'd like to look up his blog, is spelled T-A-M-M-E-U-S. Bill Tamaeus. He can be searched for and find his very regular blog called Faith Matters. Listeners can call in today and talk with Bill, 333-9455 within the 217 area code. We'll get you on several lines, and our engineer, Jason Croft, will put you in line to be live on the air with our guest. If it's long distance, punch in 1-800-222-9455. So, locally, 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course, or long distance, 800-222-WILL.
And I would invite any of the people who knew my family members who went to the University of Illinois to join in here. Illinois native, so have some connections there.
Where did you go to school, Bill?
Well, I went to high school in Woodstock, Illinois, in the northern part of the state. Grew up there, but went to the University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri.
When did you start writing for the Kansas City Star?
Well, my first job out of college was in Rochester, New York. I was with the Gannett paper there for a little over 3 years, and I moved to the Star in September of 1970, so 41 years ago. And I took formal retirement in the middle of 06, but continued to write off and on for them, and they feature my daily blog on the Star's website still.
We have a caller wanting to join our conversation on line 4 from Coles County. You're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to mention that I agree that we need more civility in public discussion. I agree with you 100%. But, you know, the extreme of that can be bad, too. As I'm sure both of you realize, there are an awful lot of regular folks in the country, millions of them, who take the attitude, and I'm sure you've heard it, that, you know, people in Congress ought to just get along. They ought to all just get along and not argue and not debate and just do what's right. The question is, what is right? And that extreme is almost as bad as the incivility. You know, you can go so far that a lot of people, I think that attitude is almost undemocratic, anti-democratic. because really freewheeling debate, like you have, for example, in the British House of Commons, is very healthy, is very democratic, and it sounds like there's an awful lot of people in the country that don't even want that. They don't want arguments. They don't want debates between people. Just do what's right. And, of course, as I'm sure both of you gentlemen realize, nobody can figure out exactly what is right unless there is a lot of freewheeling debate. And,
absolutely. And that's what our democratic, our Republican, lowercase r, political system is designed to,
yeah,
to create and,
yeah,
allow.
Yeah. I
think
agree.
You make a good point, and in fact, it's a point that parallels something else Oz Guinness wrote in his book. He says that yet another potential error is for Americans to confuse civility with niceness.
Yeah. Mm.
As if civility, he says, were a higher form of manners fit for a Victorian dinner.
Yes.
Yeah, that's not the point of civility at all. Rather,
yeah,
it's to have a public discourse that is shaped by respect for one another.
Yeah.
Even when we disagree profoundly about policy matters. But so often we take those policy differences and turn them into ad hominem attacks, and I think we need to knock that off.
So you're not against robust debate?
Not at all.
Okay.
And if you want to throw something else at me that I disagree with, well, we can have one here.
Well, thank the listener for that, raising that very good point. Bill, what have been the most contentious issues in your blogs over your, or maybe even including your columns from the various places they've been published over the years? What has raised the most comment, the most objection, the most discussion?
Well, one of them that I wrote last year was a defense of locating the proposed Islamic center, which it was to include a mosque, near Ground Zero in New York. As you know, that raised lots of anger in the country and lots of uncivil discourse. I tried to approach it from a pretty disinterested, in the sense of not emotional, position. And I tried to argue, as a member, as a matter of fact, of a 9/11 family, my nephew died that day, that near Ground Zero is exactly the right place for this kind of facility to be built. That certainly stirred up some conversation, some of it not all that friendly, and I said, when I wrote that fairly long blog entry, I said, I don't need you to agree with me, but perhaps you'd do me the kindness of reading dispassionately some of the reasons that led me to this conclusion that this is exactly right, the right place for this kind of Islamic presence. And then bullet point by bullet point, I went through why I thought it was the right thing to do. And let me just briefly quote one of the reasons. I said, one reason we can be confident that the new center is not being created to breed terrorism is that the imam, Faisal Abdul Rauf, is a Sufi. Sufism is the mystic tradition in Islam. I said, think of the 13th century Persian poet known as Rumi, until a few years ago, and maybe still the most popular poet in the United States. I said, from Rumi to terrorism, you just can't get there. I said, imagining Faisal Abdul Rauf as a promoter of terrorism is like trying to imagine an old order Amish computer technician or a Quaker abortion clinic bomber. And so that was the approach I took there, and it engendered, as I say, both some good conversation in terms of being respectful, but also a little hate mail. And I suppose if a columnist is not turning up hate mail, maybe he's not doing his job.
On Focus Today, we're talking with Bill Tamaeus. That's spelled T-A-M-M-E-U-S. He's a columnist for the Kansas City Star Online, the National Catholic Reporter Online, the Presbyterian Outlook. He has a blog called Faith Matters. We're talking about, has America lost its mind? Can we talk together anymore in a civil, respectful way? We have another caller willing to try to do that on line number one. Yes, you're on Focus.
That was an optimistic comment. I'm enjoying it. I agree with the first caller. It's all the fault of politicians. Kind of pretty serious about that, really. It seems to me like a lot of people at my common level don't quite get that a lot of these guys, I think anyway, are arguing for show. And, I know at least 20 years ago, when there wasn't so much money in it and guys roomed in Washington, a lot of those guys that argued the hardest out in public would, be sharing quarters together at night. And, it's like you said, me and you can have a big old argument, but we can still be friends, on a certain level. And unfortunately, faith and religion are two different things. You quoted some radical Christian people right at the beginning that don't help matters out from that point of view either. I guess the other thing I'd say is it seems like a lot of individuals in our country, we're all empowered to have a opinion about everything, no matter how little we know about it. To me, a little apathy on things that you don't know anything about is not a bad thing.
I like that. There's a voice for apathy.
I thank the caller for that comment. Any more response, Bill?
Well, one thing I think we need to remember is that this is not a new problem. It's been around a long time, but the sharpness of it, the depth of it, perhaps is new. I have run across, by the way, Steve, a thing that George Washington wrote a long, long time ago. He created what he called 110 Rules of Civility because he recognized back then that we weren't doing all that well with it. And I'll just quote a couple of these. One says, begins, as you might expect, every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present. But the number two, he says, when in company, put not your hands to any part of the body not usually discovered. and then he says, show nothing to your friend that might affright him. And the one I particularly like is, sleep not when others speak. But the point is that our problem with public civility goes back a long way, and even Washington and others certainly recognize that, and we've been dealing with it. But in a time when we can say what's on our minds electronically, leaving anonymous comments on blogs and firing off emails immediately and so on, we have upped the technology for incivility.
In your books, you talk about the importance of people having going beyond tolerance to active compassion. Particularly in your book, They Were Just People, talking about people of many different faiths who helped rescue Jews in Poland during the Holocaust and World War II.
Right.
In your writing about many different faiths, have you seen where the roots of that compassion is in Islam, in Buddhism, in Judaism, Hinduism? You seem to comment on all of these major world religions at one time or another.
Yeah, I really think that in most, if not all, of the great religions, there is a deep respect for life, a deep respect for the fact that we are valued as individuals by the Creator. You find that expressed in various ways. Clearly, the Christian notion about that finds its deep roots in Judaism. And Islam drew from those roots, both Jewish and Christian roots, as it proposed the ways that people ought to live together. And it's interesting when you look at the early days of Islam, for instance, we know today in the news this week, for instance, there was the announcement that the king of Saudi Arabia was finally going to allow women to vote. And it's interesting to me that if you look at the roots of Islam when Muhammad was around, as he embraced Islam, it was really quite liberating for women at the time. In the Quran itself, there are rules about how inheritance should be shared with women. They're not just written off as widows, that sort of thing. And I find that in every of the great religions, there is this sense of respect for the individual. What happened in Islam was that as the religion moved into different cultures, the patriarchal nature of those cultures often overwhelmed Islam, overwhelmed its liberating impulse for women. And that is taking a long time to come back. It's happening here and there, and certainly among Muslims in this country, in America, that's not much of an issue. Many of my Muslim friends are very strong women who run businesses and who enjoy the privileges and responsibilities of citizenship that all of us do. But I think you find that basic impulse of respect for human life in all of the major faiths.
You have written in some of your columns and web blogs about how current American culture and Western European culture have, you think, overwhelmed some of the original Christian notions. Want to comment on any of that?
Well, I think we know that Christendom essentially is dead. And by Christendom, I mean the notion that all of society ought to be ordered by Christian thought, and that the structure of Christianity, the church hierarchy and so on, ought to influence everything about government. There was a time when you could simply assume that if you opened a church, you didn't have to do anything. People would just show up on Sundays. That idea of Christendom being dominant is clearly gone in Western Europe, in Canada. It is going away in the United States, even though Christians still, at least nominally, constitute a strong majority of Americans. But the reality is that our religious landscape is changing. And in this country, we are finding mosques and Hindu temples and other houses of worship showing up in Midwestern neighborhoods. And it's one of the reasons that I think we need to figure out who we are as a people of faith, who are our neighbors, so that we don't engage in this prejudice and fear that comes out of ignorance. Fear that grows out of ignorance eventually leads to bad stuff, including violence. And only when we are able to talk with one another as human being to human being, even though we are different religions, I think can we live in harmony. And And I think the death of Christendom really gives the Christian church an opportunity to really be the church. And by that I mean that part of the job of the Christian church, it seems to me as a Christian, is to critique what's going on in the culture and to say, look, this is happening. We've got bad education. We've got pawn shops growing up around gambling casinos. We've got sexual problems. We've got whatever the problem is. The church, in some way, ought to have something to say about that, not to beat people over the head, but rather to stand back and to critique. And we have difficulty doing that if we as Christians are the ones running everything. Theologian Stanley Hauerwas celebrates the fact that, as he says, Christians are becoming the peasants now. You know, we can critique society because we're not running it anymore, and good. And I agree with that.
We're about halfway through our program of Focus today here on WILL AM, AM 580. Heard also at 90.9 FM HD3 and online at WILL.illinois.edu/AM. These programs are archived, and you may go to that same website if you've missed part of this program or would like to listen to previous Focus programs. I'm Steve Shoemaker, sitting in today for David Inge, who's taking some time off, talking today with Bill Timaeus, author of books and columns and blogs. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back to Focus.
When comedy writer Will Reiser had cancer, he and his friend Seth Rogen amused themselves with ideas for ridiculous cancer comedies.
We wanted to do like a parody of The Bucket List, where you do like really absurd, ridiculous things like, you know, skydiving with hookers.
Reiser did write a cancer comedy, 50-50. Reiser and the film star Joseph Gordon-Levitt on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
WILL programs are made possible by Women's Health Practice and Dr. Suzanne Troopin, offering obstetrics, gynecology, and fertility services on Neal Street in Champaign. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan provider and is accepting new patients. More information is available at womenshealthpractice.com.
And back on Focus today with our guest from Kansas City, Bill Timaeus, spelled T-A-M-M-E-U-S. His blog is called Faith Matters, and he also is a columnist for the National Catholic Reporter, the Presbyterian Outlook, the Kansas City Star, where for 27 years he helped write editorials for that paper as well as having a column. Bill, we were talking about some of the columns you've written that have generated a lot of response, and because I admire your writing so much, I did ask you to have a couple samples of some of your columns, at least a portion of them, just to read for our listeners who may not have had a chance to see them in print. Could you give us an example or two?
Yeah, Steve, let me draw on a couple of passages first from a blog entry or two, because the one I've chosen here I think relates to our subject of can't we talk with each other, and it has to do, every time I write about homosexuality and faith, there's a good response, and sometimes it stirs up people who are who don't want a civil discourse here. But earlier in the year, I noted the disappearance of the don't ask, don't tell policy in the military. And I asked, if I'm going to write about this, why write about this on a blog about religion and not a blog about the military? And I said, our society's profound prejudice against people of homosexual orientation is deeply rooted in a particular way of misreading the Bible. And this faith-based bigotry permeates the culture in countless ways, including the reluctance of our military and civilian leaders to stand up for what's right and give gays and lesbians in the service equal protection under the law. I suggested in this piece that a careful, open-hearted reading of the Christian Bible, which of course includes the Hebrew Scriptures, offers no warrant for condemning people of homosexual orientation, and yet one hears anti-gay polemic from pulpits in this country regularly. Because such preaching is presumed to be based on the Word of God, people take it seriously, and therein lies the problem. I write more here, but it seems to me that if we can unpack how it is that we come to our religious positions, we discover that a lot of it has to do with the way in which we interpret the Bible. And even biblical literalists interpret the Bible. There's simply no other way to read anything, including the Bible, without interpreting it. And I am simply proposing that we look at how the Bible was written and what it really says and what it doesn't say and take it seriously as a way of unplugging from this harsh position on either side that I think I'm right, you think you're right, and there's no compromise. So that was one piece that I wrote that I thought would engender some conversation, and it certainly did.
And let me give the phone numbers for listeners who'd like to respond, make a comment or question, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, or 1-800-222-9455 if it's a long-distance call. Bill, when you sat down to write your blog, Faith Matters, that comes out, what, every day?
Right. I set it to publish at 12:15 every morning. The exception to that is that I usually have one entry that covers both Saturday and Sunday.
On the weekend.
Yeah, but it's six entries a week, essentially.
And then plus you're writing a column every 2 weeks that's different for the National Catholic Reporter and other ones for the Kansas City Star and the Outlook. What got you writing so much?
Well, you know, when I was on the editorial page of the Star, I wrote for a number of years, I wrote an average of 5.5 columns a week. I wrote a daily column that was a humor column that was full of quips about political satire and whatnot. And then I also wrote a column every other Sunday, a narrative column. And I eventually turned some of those quip columns into narrative columns. There's just a rhythm to that writing schedule that seems to fit me. I suppose when I look back over 45 years of stuff that I've produced, you know, only a few things really hold up well. Enough to throw into a book at one point. My first book is called A Gift of Meaning. It's a collection of my more serious columns. But a lot of what you do in journalism has a half-life of about 12 hours, and you're trying to be as topical and timely as possible. And I enjoy that sort of sense of being out on the edge. So when I went to, in 2004, when I moved my column from the editorial page to the faith section, it became a weekly column, along with some other reporting I was doing, but I missed that daily rhythm. And so I created, at the end of 2004, I created this blog to get me back to that. I'm sort of officially retired, but everybody who hears that laughs at me, and I see why.
We have another caller waiting to join the discussion on line number one. You're on the air with Bill Timaeus.
Yes, hello. I'm so glad I caught you. And I do agree with you that God, well, for me, the God is a God of love and a God of inclusiveness, not exclusiveness. And I just really am enjoying and interested in what you're saying, and I'm looking forward to reading your book, and I'm glad I found you. Listening today. And the question I have is, have you read the book, The Naked Anabaptist? I'll just hang up and say, keep doing what you're doing.
Would you repeat the title of that book, please?
The Naked Anabaptist.
Thank you.
I'm aware of that book. I have had it in my hands. I have not given it as much attention as I should. Tell me what you.
Well, she rung off, I'm afraid, Bill. Sorry.
All right. I'm trying to bring back in my head some of the details about that book, but I remember thinking that it was a good book, and I'll have to look that one up again. It's interesting, Steve, as I have been doing interfaith kinds of work, one of the areas that I have become more acquainted with in this last year or so is the Anabaptist community, which you mentioned with the name of this book, and the Anabaptists are the Mennonites, the Church of the Brethren, and so on. There is, believe it or not, an insurance company that was rooted in the Mennonite community. It's today called MAX, which stands for Mutual Aid Exchange. And earlier this year, I was asked to join the board of the MAX insurance company to help them move from selling their homeowners and auto and farm insurance just to Anabaptists, but to an ecumenical audience. They have broadened their product consumer line, and I'm trying to help them make sort of inroads into this broader ecumenical community. But in the process, I've been learning more about the Mennonites and their culture today, and where they're centered, and
the Amish,
right. Yeah, and they're wonderful people, and with a real commitment to living out their faith. And there's a wide variety within the Anabaptist tradition. There are Old Order Mennonites and Mennonites that look like Presbyterians and so on. But it's been a good education for me to get connected in that way. And it's a reminder of the kind of rich depth of faith life that exists in the United States.
As we talk about civility and public discussion, of course, talk radio plays a big part of that ever since the end of the Fairness Doctrine, where commercial stations didn't have to provide opportunity for both sides of any argument or any political position. They could just select one, and often seem to select the loudest and the worst. But how does the rest of society respond to a right wing that has so much airtime?
Well, it's a good question, and I think that's part of what's bothering us today. It's interesting that in various surveys, the media gets blamed for our lack of civility. USA Today last year had a piece about a new study from the Center for Political Participation at Allegheny College, and the finding is that Americans overwhelmingly say civility is important to democracy, but when they look around as to where they find it, they're ashamed at the way elected officials are acting, and they blame the media. Now, the media is such a broad term. It used to mean newspapers, and then it meant newspapers and radio, and then it meant newspapers, magazines, radio, and TV. And now, of course, it means absolutely everything, including the wild Internet, where anything can get published, and often is. And so when I hear criticism of the media, I really like to hear chapter and verse. Are you talking about a story on page 6 of the New York Times, and what was it about that story you didn't like? Or are you talking about Rush Limbaugh and something he said, or Rachel Maddow on MSNBC? You know, I think one of the things we do in this country to make our civil discourse worse is to use labels for everything, to call one another liberals and conservatives and moderates, and all those labels all hide a lot more than they reveal. And so when people say the media, I think it's up to everyone to challenge someone and say, specifically, what do you mean by that? Give me chapter and verse. And I think that can help to lead to some more understanding and some of our, you know, and to lower our the temperature of our conversation.
Let's go to another caller on line one. We're talking with Bill Timaeus, a web blogger and columnist. Line number one, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. I'm wondering if you might want to say something about incivility in the presence of great disparity of power. And I don't know whether you would consider civil disobedience to be an instance of incivility. I hope not, but thinking of a couple of examples, one is demonstrations going on in New York and Wall Street now, where people are being obstreperous, getting in the way of doing business on Wall Street, but trying to make a point. Another are other demonstrations that happened, I guess, in Kansas City, and I know some people from here had gone there against the building of a new nuclear weapons components plant.
Right.
And I don't know whether that's something that you'd written about, but I just wonder what you think about civil disobedience as a part of civil society. You know,
well,
people are really biking to, well, I'll stop there. Thanks.
No, thank you for that question. My own view is that civil disobedience has a respected and an important role in our culture. I want, however, people who commit civil disobedience to understand that there are consequences to it, and they must be willing to accept those consequences. And they might be arrest, they might be whatever. When you engage in breaking the law and are unwilling to take those consequences, I think that's a problem. But civil disobedience, you know, the civil rights movement in the 60s, the 50s, 60s, 70s, would not have achieved what it did without some civil disobedience. So as the first caller we had today raised the question of, am I against vigorous debate? No, I'm not against vigorous debate, nor am I against civil disobedience. But I think that has to be carefully thought through, and you have to use it perhaps sparingly. But it's a tool to employ for sure.
And of course, extreme limits go as so far as during the days of the Holocaust and World War II, some of the religious folks in Germany felt that it was appropriate to even try to assassinate Hitler as a way to stop the wars, the Holocaust. That's an extreme example, but one of your books, They Were Just People, deal with just that issue.
Yeah, that's right. One of those people in Germany who tried to stop Hitler was Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and on my blog this weekend, I will be reviewing the paperback release of a wonderful biography called Bonhoeffer by Eric Metaxas. It came out last year in hardback. It's now out in paperback. It's kind of the definitive biography of Bonhoeffer. And actually, this might be a chance for readers to go and see how I try to make a point in a civil way. That I found something missing in Metaxas' book on Bonhoeffer, and I raised that with him. I sent him a note and said, why didn't I see you deal with this? He sent me a note back explaining it, And so I'm writing about that on this admiring review. I like the book a lot, but I thought something was missing, and so I tried to deal with that. I didn't send him a note saying, "You idiot, why didn't you do this?" But tried to do it in a civil way, and he responded in a civil way. And so I think that's possible. And you're right. My latest book has to do with people who did civil disobedience by standing up to the Nazis and by saying, "I'm going to help save people, even if it puts me at the risk of my life."
And tell me again, the co-author, how to pronounce the rabbi's name?
Rabbi Jacques Kukierkorn. His name is Polish. In Polish, it means cukier, means sugar. But it's pronounced Kukierkorn, and he's a native of Brazil, but all of his grandparents came from Poland. And so we spent time in Poland doing interviews and time in this country interviewing Jewish survivors and the families who helped to save them.
We're down to our last 4 or 5 minutes. We have another caller waiting on line one. Yes, your comment, please.
Hello. I've been enjoying the discussion a lot. I would like to comment that when you were talking about civil disobedience, number one, it's implied in the word civil that it is it can be a civil undertaking, and I you said that it should be used sparingly. In your opinion, I would like to politely disagree with that. In these times of incredible extremes between the poor and the rich in this country, and I feel like most of us are being squeezed so badly that we need a lot of civil disobedience.
Let me ask you, what form would that civil disobedience take,
protest,
in your view?
I would say protest. I'm not talking about breaking windows or, but I'm saying a lot of expressing one's anger,
right,
and one's concern with the situation. I think that the laws are working against us, and so we have to work in pardon me, I'm sorry. In whatever way we can, obviously civilly, but you know, assertively.
Right. No, I don't disagree with you at all. But I draw a distinction between protest, legitimate legal protest, and civil disobedience, which means intentionally breaking a law to call attention to its injustice.
We've needed to close off that call because we're getting close to our end time, Bill. You want to follow up with that issue?
Well, just to say that I think the caller is right that this is a time when we should be raising our voices and we should be arguing our positions with vehemence but not incivility, and that maybe there are times when we feel so strongly about an issue that it requires us to break a law we consider unjust. And in those cases, as I say, I think we need to be willing to accept the legal consequences of our acts.
Let's try to sneak in one more caller, if you're very quick, on line four.
Hi. Well, listening to this hour, as an atheist, I'd have to say, looking back at human history, some of the most incredible examples of incivility have come from the people of faith. And I was wondering how your guest would respond to that.
I absolutely agree with you. I think the record is good in terms of people of faith offering incivility, and too often incivility toward atheists and agnostics and others, secular humanists, whatever, freethinkers, whatever you want to call yourselves. I think our record is terrible there, and I'm trying to do what I can to make that a better record in my time.
I want to thank our callers today on Focus. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm sitting in today for David Inge, and I'll be on 1 hour tomorrow with a guest. My usual program here on WILL is Sunday nights at 5 o'clock, Keeping the Faith. Bill Timaeus has been a guest on that show, and those programs are archived, and listeners who would like to go back and hear an interview about his most recent book with Rabbi Kukukorn, They Were Just People, Stories of Rescue in Poland During the Holocaust, may go to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith, and we're very informal on Keeping the Faith, so there's no G in keeping, but go to that website and you'll be able to listen at your convenience to that program archived there, as well as other Keeping the Faith, and of course Focus programs can be heard at the same website with a slash FOCUS. We've been talking today with Bill Timaeus, the former Faith Section columnist for the Kansas City Star. For 27 years, he wrote columns there. Since his retirement, he has been doing a blog as well as doing fairly regular columns for the National Catholic Reporter, the Kansas City Star, as I mentioned, and the Presbyterian Outlook. He's the author also of A Gift of Meaning, a collection of his columns. Both of his books are available at his website as well as many other places. I want to thank Bill for talking with us today. His columns are about issues of religion and ethics, and today we've been talking about the issue of civility in our discussions. Has America lost its mind? Can we talk together? And I do want to thank our callers who gave some excellent examples of how to do that in a very polite and civil way, and yet expressed their opinions very clearly.
I agree. Thanks for that opportunity, Steve.
And that, of course, is a regular feature here on Focus. It's a great opportunity in this community in the Midwest for people to have good conversations on good discussions led by its usual host, David Inge. Thanks for listening to Focus. Go to that website and you'll be able to listen at your convenience to that program archived there, as well as other Keeping the Faith. And, of course, Focus programs can be heard at the same website with a slash FOCUS. We've been talking today with Bill Timaeus, the former Faith Section columnist for the Kansas City Star. For 27 years, he wrote columns there. Since his retirement, he has been doing a blog as well as doing fairly regular columns for the National Catholic Reporter, the Kansas City Star, as I mentioned, and the Presbyterian Outlook. He's the author also of A Gift of Meaning, a collection of his columns. Both of his books are available at his website as well as many other places. I want to thank Bill for talking with us today. His columns are about issues of religion and ethics, and today we've been talking about the issue of civility in our discussions. Has America lost its mind? Can we talk together? And I do want to thank our callers who gave some excellent examples of how to do that in a very polite and civil way, and yet expressed their opinions very clearly.
I agree. Thanks for that opportunity, Steve.
And that, of course, is a regular feature here on Focus. It's a great opportunity in this community in the Midwest for people to have good conversations on good discussions led by its usual host, David Inge. Thanks for listening to Focus.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
And at 2 minutes before 12 o'clock, I'm Jeff Bossert, the host for the Afternoon Magazine today, with a look at market numbers at this midday. In Kansas City, hard red winter wheat for December is 736¾. That's down 16¼. And for March, 751¼, down 16¾. A lot of downward movement in the markets today. In Chicago, December wheat, 644¾, down 13½. March, 678, down 14. December corn, 638, down 14¼. March, 651¼, down 14½. May, 658¾, down 14¼. November soybeans, 1236, down 27. January beans, 1247½, down 27½. March, 1256¼, down 26¼. October soybean meal, 319.30, down 7.30. October soybean oil, 51.81, down 76. October live cattle, 120.85, up 25. and no trading in the feeder cattle. October lean hogs, 88.85, up 22.5. At this hour for the Dow, it's up 1 at 111.92. The S&P, 11.72, down 3. And the NASDAQ, 25.45, that's down 155. Mostly cloudy around Champaign-Urbana today with scattered showers possible. The high 68 tonight. Mostly cloudy skies, the low 48 degrees. 64 on Friends Plaza. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana.